Hello everyone and welcome to the Garnet Community Podcast. Today I'm really delighted to be joined by Dr. Charlotte Kershaw from the University of Oxford. And we're going to be talking about a recent paper just published in eLife. And the title of the paper is Two Mechanisms Regulate Directional Cell Growth in Arabidopsis Lateral Roots. So it's great to welcome you today, Charlotte. And it would be great if you could give us an overview of the paper, please.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. So yeah, the paper in eLife really drills down a little bit deeper into a mechanism that we identified a few years ago in lateral roots. And this mechanism is regulated by a small protein called RebA5C, which is involved in regulating endomembrane trafficking. And what we found before was that RebA5C is involved in specifying a trafficking pathway just to the geometric edges in cells. And the disruption of this edge-directed trafficking pathway led to complete loss of directional growth in lateral root cells. Now, what we didn't know before is why those cells lose their ability to grow. So this is the question that this paper addresses. And in particular, one of the things that is very well known in plant sciences, which is one of the leading paradigms, is that plants control their growth direction through orientation of cellulose in the cell wall, whose deposition in turn is controlled by the orientation of microtubules on the other side of the plasma membrane. Yes. Now, it has been described in the past that cell edges can, in turn, control the orientation of microtubules in such cells. Mm-hmm. So one of the earliest hypotheses that we really wanted to test was whether our edge-directed trafficking pathway had anything to do with organizing microtubules.
Okay.
And to our huge surprise, what we actually found was that instead of perturbing microtubule and microfibril organization and make them less organized, which would fit into this less organized growth, we found the complete opposite.
Okay.
So all of a sudden, in those cells, we had hyperparallel microtubule and also cellulose synthase tracks, but still we had this completely perturbed growth. So to us, that was a hugely surprising finding, but what we then ended up working out was that you perturb both microtubules and RebA5C in parallel, you actually get an enhanced phenotype.
Okay.
So we ascribe this reorientation to is not the fundamental principle that causes this defect in growth in the case of the RebA5C and I mutants, but instead it's a compensatory mechanism. So our RebA5C mechanism is something that occurs independently of the cellulose-based mechanism. And these lateral root cells use these two independent mechanisms to control their growth direction. Mm-hmm. And we've got some computational data that supports this hypothesis, as well as a variety of different pharmacological and genetic treatments. Mm-hmm. Now, I have to admit, we still don't quite know how RebA5C changes cellular mechanical properties, okay, which is what we propose here. So that is still a bit that remains open. But what we definitely do know at this stage is that we have these two mechanisms that are independent of each other, but that can interact with each other because one can compensate for the other.
Well, yeah, you don't know answer everything in the first paper, right? You want extra stuff to do. So I got a few questions about this. So first of all, so you mentioned this RAB A5C. So can you describe the tool that you use to test this? So it's not a knockout mutant. It's a different sort of tool, right?
Absolutely, yeah. So one of the big difficulties in the RAB field is that we have quite large gene families. In particular, for the RAB A5C, we've got a clade with five members, the RebA5 clade. Mm-hmm. And the difficulty there is that it's very tricky to generate a quintuple mutant. And then also in some of the other cases, for some of the other RebAs that have been studied in other organisms, they do regulate really fundamental mechanisms. So if you do end up with complete loss of function, quite often you will see a lethal phenotype.
Okay.
So instead we make use of the fact that these Reb GTPases are actually activated within cells through exchanging their nucleotide bound status. So they go from a status where they're bound to GDP and inactive and in the cytosol to a state where they are active, membrane associated, and bound to GTP. Mm-hmm. And that step is mediated by an interacting factor called the GEF or guanidine exchange factor. And what we do is we use a variant of our RebA5C protein that has a reduced affinity for nucleotides. And by titrating that in an axis, we can effectively inhibit the inhibition of the wild-type protein because we titrate out all of the factors that are required for activating it.
Okay.
And we do this in an inducible manner, right. So we don't always swamp the cells with this, but instead we're using a dexamethasone inducible system so we can very precisely control both in time, and if we want in space, how much of our protein is actually expressed that then inhibits the edge directed trapping pathway.
So if you use a set of DEX concentrations, do you see different phenotypes?
Yes, absolutely. So that's another advantage. We have this dosage control, and this has been really useful in a variety of different contexts in this paper, because we can induce this at a very low level, we can induce it as a high level, and what we see is really a linear relationship across a certain spectrum of those concentrations, which means that we can play around with how much of each of these proteins is around. And that was in this paper. We've used this, and also in our previous work, it has been really instrumental to just show that this is a specific inhibition of that, just that edge-directed trafficking.
So this paper, as I say, we were kind of urging people to go and have a look at it. So there's some lovely images in there, but also there's some foundational modeling work. So can you talk us through the process of how you put those two things together? Do you do all that stuff yourself? Or are you a biologist? Are you a modeler? How does it work?
Yeah, so I'm a developmental biologist by training. And one of the great things for me in Oxford is that we have a fantastic interdisciplinary community here. And we ended up looking at our lateral roots, coming quite quickly to the realization that probably something is wrong with cell wall mechanics, and experimentally that's something that's incredibly difficult to deal with. And there are some methods coming up now. I think this is an incredibly exciting field in general, but really one of the beautiful things about computational modeling is that you can make predictions about mechanical properties that are very difficult to do in an experimental setting.
Right.
So we connected with a group in engineering science led by Antoine Jerusalem, who's an expert in finite element modeling. So he's an engineering by training. And I'm affiliated with that group. So with this model, we were in a really lucky position that one of the postdoctoral researchers in Antoine's group had just developed a model for the role of axons in brain matter. And was able to use that mathematical formulation and adapt it to the to our specific case where we have cellulose fibers, also a fibrillar structure embedded in a matrix. So it's the mathematical formulation that had been developed in that group. And then I'm actively involved in the modeling. So those models of different cells, those geometries, I create them based on the experimental data that I've collected. And then the beauty is that we can close this loop immediately, because I can then also do the experiments to test these model predictions. So we are very tight-knit.
Okay, that's really nice. And you're obviously showing that the models, the predictive models, match what you see with the experimental data, which is what you like to see, obviously.
That's what we like, absolutely.
So just to finish, so you explained there's two mechanisms, and we like to think about what future work. So can you think about why there are two mechanisms, and what are you going to do to work out maybe which is more important, or if they're equally important? What sort of things have you got planned?
Yeah, so the thing that we think is really exciting is that there's a developmental gradient when you look at lateral roots. So once cells have exited the meristem and have started to expand rapidly, we do see parallel aligned microfibers and microtubules in wild-type cells. So we do think that mechanism takes over once you are just doing rapid elongation growth. But it's the young meristematic cells that apparently are more reliant on the edge-based mechanism. And we think that may have something to do with the fact that they have to deal with new cell walls being inserted, so they may have to kind of jiggle around, be a bit more flexible in their growth. And also they are situated on part of the lateral root that's not cylindrical, but that's tapered towards the tip. And then the other thing that we think is really intriguing is that when you look at primary roots, established primary roots, we don't really see this mechanism active to the same extent. And one of the really striking differences between primary roots and lateral roots of an early age is that there's no overlying root cap. So we think the mechanical information that comes from an overlaying tissue layer is something that means you're not dependent on this edge-directed trafficking in the same way. So it really is a surface phenomenon, and it is a phenomenon that seems to be particularly important in cells that may need a bit more flexibility. But that's cross-conjecture at this stage. We've got some really exciting experimental things that we want to follow up in. One of the things that I'm particularly excited about is that a really early phenotype that we see is a change in overall growth distribution. So if you think about edges, they connect different cells. We think this may be a great way to actually coordinate growth across a tissue.
Okay.
So there are some really exciting trajectories that we are trying to understand, but we're also not just forever going to focus on the edges. We really want to understand how the different trafficking pathways that are active in these cells that deliver material to different regions of the cells are really coordinated with each other.
Okay.
So we're in a bigger picture that this work is fitting into and leading to.
Yeah, so surface phenomenon, that sounds kind of engineering-y in itself, so there's some collaborations there, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly, and this collaboration, we're really taking it forward, so I'm really excited because we've integrated some of this work into a new modeling framework that was developed in my collaborator's lab, and that's really something where we can now go from still fairly simple models that largely look at instantaneous deformation to models that look at much longer time frames than look at real growth. Mm-hmm. And we're also collaborating with a physicist here, Sonia Contera, in the Department of Physics to do a new way of atomic force microscopy to really mechanically characterize the surface of these cells data into our multidisciplinary framework as well.
Well, that sounds very exciting indeed. So as I said, we urge people to go and have a look at this paper. There's some great images in there. And also you can see if you search on Charlotte's previous work, she's really explained how they've set up the experimental system to image these lateral roots as well. So go and check out the paper. But thank you very much, Charlotte, for talking to us today.